And today is December 8, 2014. It's 8 a.m. in the West Coast, 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it's 8 p.m. in Israel, in the Middle East. We're so excited today on The Impossible Truth. We have an incredible guest, and I want to not waste any second because the story is a true story, and the man is incredible, and I want him to come and talk to us about his story and a movie that is going to be incredible coming up soon. So we have our guest, Mr. Dr. Mark Ben-Huri. Dr. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm so honored, sir, because your story is a true story about the escape from Iran and about the change in the regime in the 1917s from Iran to America and all the life story. And I would like you to tell me something about the book that will emphasize how important it is for us today to learn what happened in the past so we avoid the mistake of the futures.
I had to write this book because I saw the press didn't cover the revolution in Iran correctly, and it was a lot of misinformation. In 1976, I became Shah of Iran dentist because I was one of the six original investigators of dental implants. And at the time, I was the chairman of Department of Oral Implantology at Columbia University. I was the only engineer in the group because before I became a dentist, I had master's degree in mechanical engineering. So most of the design of the implant was done by me. Shah had a ski accident in Switzerland, and he broke his jaw and lost three of his teeth in the lower left. And the Swiss dentist made him a removable partial, and he didn't want it, and he wanted to have a fixed teeth. And they told him there is a new idea and technology in the United States. They call it dental implant. And the Shah invited all four scientists that they were head of the research. I was the chairman of the research in dental implant at Columbia. David Sumney was in Harvard. Andre Baumhammer was in Pittsburgh, and Isaiah Liu in NYU. So he invited all four of us to Iran, and then when he found out that I was born in Iran, and he decided that I would be his doctor of choice to treat him. As I started treating the Shah and his family, I was going in and out of the palace in regularly from 1976 till he was deposed. And then after he was in exile, I was with him as a dentist and a friend till the time that he passed away in Egypt. The press really did disservice to the world, which 99% of what they said about the Shah was not true, or about the Savak, because they start making demonstrations all over the world, in New York, Chicago, Washington, Paris, London, Rome, everywhere, against the Shah and his Savak. According to Amnesty International, from 1953 till 1979, it was just 378 political deaths in Iran. Today, Amnesty International say that there is one an hour, and I don't see any demonstration anywhere against this atrocity. Shah, when he started in 1953, it was Iranian. And had just one university, University of Tehran, with 2,000 students, and there was really very little road, and the infrastructure was non-existent. By 1979, he opened 12 major universities, 40 colleges, and the total number of the students at the university was 1.5 million. He made a railway all over the country, airport in all the major cities, and the highways all over the country. And he really brought Iran from the dark ages to 20th century. Unfortunately, President Carter made the biggest political mistake of the late 20th century by overthrowing the Shah and bringing Khomeini to power. By bringing Khomeini to power, after Khomeini consolidated his power, which he killed over 139,000 people, from the Nationalists to Democrats to Today Party to Mujahideen, and after he consolidated his power, he was attacked the U.S. embassy and kept the American hostages for 444 days. The reason
we remember that story.
Yeah,
and we remember that story very much.
And they knew that they are dealing with a very weak president, same as it's happening right now, because the Iran nuclear talk right now is all to Iranian advantage, and the West is making an extremely huge mistake by continue talking to him. Especially now they give him 7 more months, and on top of it, because of this terrorist group sitting on a table with them, which they did not comply with anything that they were supposed to do before, and they are giving them $700 million a month. Iranian, they're constantly going to postpone till they have their nuclear bomb. And nuclear bomb in the hand of the Ayatollahs, I think, is invitation to World War III. This is really unfortunate, because at the time, a lot of Iranians, they were calling me and they were begging me, please talk to anybody that you know in a Congress or Senate or people, and not to sit and talk with the Iranian regarding the nuclear, because they were going bankrupt. The government employee, they were not being paid more than 4 months, and they start demonstrating. And the Iranian gas company, can you imagine Iranian gas company went bankrupt? It's in bankruptcy right now. They have stolen so much of the wealth of the country that the country today have over 46% unemployment. 67% of the Iranian today are below age 30. This is a time bomb. During the Shah, it was zero unemployment. In fact, they had a shortage of the worker that they were bringing from India, Pakistan, and Philippines. Another thing that unfortunate thing happened during the Shah, that he stopped all the opium trafficking through Iran, and he closed all the opium houses and, try to make the people be aware of the addiction. Now, they are making opium so accessible in the hand of people. For example, in the pharmaceutical industry, 1 kilo of opium is more than $27,000, while in the street of Tehran is about $100. 1 fix of heroin is 3 cents. So they are making most of young people that they are unemployed and highly educated, addicted, not to rebel against them. And it is most unfortunate thing that had happened. In the West made a tremendous mistake by having negotiation started. But my book is about, one part is political, which I went through it just now. The other part, it is regarding the Iranian Jewish community. Iranian people, they lived in Iran for 2,500 years. If you go to a Bible, the story of Purim is that when Cyrus the Great fell in love with Esther and made her first crown empress of Persian Empire, Queen Esther. So we are children of Esther.
It's amazing. It's amazing because we need to go back and see the story how the Shah, after the Shah's time, your family was still in Iran and you had to liberate them. And there were so many people, a very powerful Jewish community that was an hostage to the new regime. What happened then?
Okay. What happened is that Khomeini tried to destabilize everything. So he went after the Jewish community that they were highly educated and very successful, and he arrested five industrialists that they were Jewish. One of them was my father, which we own five factories making automobile spare parts. The other one was Habib Elganayan, which had a plastic factory. And then was Beruchim, that had a chain of luxury hotel, and Muradov, which had a cement and brick manufacturing. And what happened, when my mother called me from Iran, I know they're going to kill my father if I don't move very quickly. I left my office in New York and take the first taxi to Kennedy Airport and went to London because I have a Muslim friend that he just passed away, so I can mention his name. His name was Mr. Nasser Etefak, that he knew the Ayatollahs and he knew my father. I told him, look, they are going to kill my father in 2 days. Please, I pay whatever they want, get my father out of jail now. And he called one of his Ayatollah friends, which I don't know which one. And that Ayatollah already had the secret account in Switzerland, and I had to put $140,000 in his account in order to get my father out of jail. Then I called my mother right away. I said, look, they're going to let the father out of jail in a few minutes. Go in hiding. Don't go to home. Now that they got the money, they're going to come back and ask for more. So they went in hiding in my uncle's, my mother's brother's house, which had a different name than us. And it took me 9 separate escape attempts. And finally, you know, I was able to smuggle them through the border of Iran and Turkey by the help of the Kurdish tribe that they are in the border. And the people in Turkey helped me a lot, you know. And I thanked them for that. And after that, I brought them in the United States. But
all the other
4 Jewish leaders, they all died in front of firing squad, you know, the 2 days later. Now, the Iranian Jewish community, which was over 800,000 people, when they saw this happen, they all thought that the second Adolf Hitler is coming. So they all start emigrating. Many of them, they went to Israel, and Israel right now have a very big Iranian Jewish community. And some, they went to Europe, but the majority came to United States and Canada, but mainly United States. 2 center of the Jewish people in United States is Los Angeles, which have over 200,000, and New York tri-state area have about 150,000.
And they all work hard, and they all a great contributor to the community, like yourself, you know, from taking this dental implants from the 70s and bringing it to life right now. That is a phenomenon because everybody is using it all over the world. So it's incredible. But tell me, let's go back to the escape attempt. You're saying 9 times. What happened in those 9 times? What did you do to make, you know, to try to escape? Where did you bring them?
Okay. I mean, my brother was smuggled out of the border of Iran and Pakistan. My brother-in-law, unfortunately, got killed by Khomeini thugs. He was an incredible human being, and my sister, because she had a different last name than us, and we were able to get her through the airport. But I try to get my parents out from border of Iran and Kuwait in Persian Gulf. That failed. I tried to do it through Muscat, Oman. That failed. And I treat most of the Arab leaders, so I'm going back and forth in that region more than 30 years now. So I knew everybody over there, and many of the royal families and the sheikhs and the prince and princesses. And we try to see if they can go through the airport twice, and they, you know, we failed. And I even came with one of the Kuwaiti sheikhs, which was a very dear friend. And he had a private plane, and he was going to go to Cyprus. And I changed identity and wore the custom, Arabic custom dress. And we stopped in Tehran, and we had the ambulance with my parents inside it. That they said that they have a 6 passengers. That's why they're trying to stop in Tehran to get the medical help. So the ambulance that they brought my parents in was almost at the plane, and we were going to get them inside the plane, that the group of soldiers in a jeep, they came in, and they said to the ambulance driver that you are not authorized to be here. We have our own ambulance. So ambulance driver with my parents in it, right at the plane, had to go back. And that was devastating to me and everybody else. And I appreciate the Kuwaiti sheikh that helped me, and I never forget his kindness.
I believe you. And, you know, sir, no wonder this book is becoming a movie. Because with a story like this, all the imaginaries writer cannot even come close to the reality of what you had to go through. Your incredible courage and your humanity in that time spare your parents. God, thank God. But I'm so sorry for the other family that got killed. And I know that right now in Iran, there are little Jewish life left there.
There are between 7,000 to 8,000 Jewish people left in Iran. And I was approached with the very well-known, famous independent producer with the name of Ken Del Vecchio, that he came to me and he said somebody gave my book to him on Friday, and he read the book till 4 o'clock in the morning, and he couldn't put it down. And he called me the next day and said, listen, I really love this story, I have to be told, and I want to make a movie. So we met on Monday with my attorney, and we signed a contract, and he is the producer, and Dylan Bank is going to be a director, and there is an all-star cast. The screenplay is finished, and they send it to me as they were writing it to make sure that the story is correct and they didn't alter it. And now they are casting the different actor and actresses to the role. Already they signed up Oscar-winning Paul Sorvino, that got an Oscar from a movie, Nixon, that he played.
Wow.
Henry Kissinger. He's going to play the Shah of Iran. And they have Sadie Kirkland already signed up, and they are talking to few other Oscar-winning actor and actresses that by this week all the cast is going to be done. And there is a lead actor in the very famous television in Showtime that they call it Homeland. And he's an Iranian actor, you know, and his name is Navid Negahban, that he already signed up to play in the movie. And we'll see. You know, I think that the movie is following the book, the true story of the Iranian Revolution and the plight of the Jewish people and what happened to my family very accurately and closely.
I checked your book online. It's almost out. You know, they need to go and buy it. It's The Price of Freedom, Mark Ben-Nuri. It's an incredible story. It's a true story. It's one of a movie that I want to see and I want to follow. And if we can learn something from the past, what would you say that will be a good thing for us to do now? Because we're still in the same regime that did all of that to your family, and we still have doing the same mistake of the past, and we never learn that they are playing with us. And this nuclear weapon that they are trying to achieve is actually endangering all the world. And I know that they tried to revolt a few years back, but nobody came to their rescue. They were without guns, without any weapons, and they were in the street, got slaughtered. And right now, they don't even have a chance to rise up. And
Iranians right now are being prosecuted without mercy. And anybody make any opposition against the government is dead. And the sad part of it is that many of my friends told them that after their loved one was killed and then they went to claim the body, they had to pay for a bullet to get the body. I mean, this is crime against humanity, what this regime is doing. Secondly, this regime is lying to the West. That the last time that they got the extension, there was six things they were supposed to do. And they did one minor one. The five major ones, they did not do at all. Still, they are producing the heavy water. And still, their centrifuge is making more and more pure, purified uranium. And they constantly said that this is peaceful purposes. You don't need the heavy water for peaceful purposes or uranium over 20% grade. They want to make a bomb, and the West is allowing them. And they got them out of the bankruptcy. If the West would not have talked to them and they would make a sanction harder on Iranian regime would have been fall by now. I am positive on that. But unfortunately, he threw them the lifeline, and this is very sad. They would never sign anything. Secondly, even if they sign anything that the West wants, one thing you have to understand that the Ayatollah Khamenei, supreme leader of Islamic Council, have a veto power. After that, they sign anything that you want, and they said it's fine, and we remove the sanction, and Ayatollah Khamenei comes, I don't like this, I veto it. Now you try to put the sanction back. It is impossible. So we got fooled by them so far, and we are getting fooled further, and if Iran end up to have an atomic bomb, believe me, they are going to use it. And maybe as a dirty bomb, and they're going to use it against Israel, they're going to use it against United States or European. And secondly, by having the proxy like Hezbollah and Hamas, the Shahab 5 have a range that can hit any European city. By the way, it can even go as far as New York City to hit. This is dangerous in the hand of these people. They are not responsible, and they don't care. And they can commit mass murder, and it doesn't bother them, like what they are doing in Iran. They're causing mass murder of the Iranians.
And nobody comes to the rescue. We have this story for so long, and nobody interrupted it, and nobody came, and the sanction didn't work. And we are talking to them, and they got 7 months extension on their on the work, so they can finish the bomb before we know it, and nobody is going to stop them, and then it's going to be too late.
Exactly. You know, 7 months, Frank, $70 billion a month they are giving them. I mean, $700 million a month they are giving them during these 7 months. I mean, this is outrageous. This is such pure stupidity from the West part to come up with this. And they have to stop these people. It is dangerous to the world peace.
It is. It is. It's destabilized the whole region. And, you know, Iran is the one that helped Syrian with all their killing. And, of course, Hezbollah and Hamas. And we have all those groups that are coming everywhere, and the Kurds are on their own because they are in the middle of that.
Iranian are a space-sponsored terrorist. They help all the Islamic terrorist movement around the world. They give them money, they give them weapon, they give them training. I mean, all over. I mean, right now they are making a huge base in South America. Look at what happened in Argentina. I mean, they, look at what happened Hamas, that how many rockets they shoot toward Israel. Thank God Israel had a high tech that could stop it. But God forbid if Israel did not have the Iron Dome, more than 3 or 4 million Israelis would be dead by now.
Exactly. God forbid. It's amazing. It's amazing that we cannot find a way to break that cycle. it's amazing how we cannot even start with dismantling them. For some reason, they outsmart us. Are they so smart that, you know, they can fool us for so long? Are they
Absolutely.
So powerful?
They are not powerful, but they are very smart. And there is a proverb in Iran. They said, don't trust mullah or ayatollah even when they are 6 feet underground. I mean, look at it. Before Reza Shah, the father of the Shah, that Iran was in dark ages, and he had to fight it. And he and Ataturk, they were good friend. It got to the point that he forced Iranian women get rid of veil. And many of the clergy at that time, they start raising voices that they are going to destroy Reza Shah. Reza Shah bombed more than 400 mosques around Iran. And he said, this is just a building, and he's infested by the spy and liar, and this religion is nothing but the backward, and that's why we are in this state. And his son went further, and you know, during the Shah, Iran was the only Islamic country in the world that the woman had 100% rights, as good as Israeli woman or American woman and European woman. There was no religious persecution in Iran during the Shah. May you be a Jew or Christian or Baha'i or Zoroastrian, everybody was welcome. Everybody had the same chance, and there was no discrimination. Now look at it, what happened. I mean, the Jews, Christian, Baha'i, forget it. They are prosecuting Baha'i worse than they are prosecuting the Jews. And I really feel bad for them because they are being really destroyed. And Zoroastrian, they are all second or third class citizen. And secondly, these people are destroying this nation. They stole every asset of the country. Can you imagine such a rich country that their gas company go bankrupt or get to the point that there is no job, that there is 46% unemployment, and they're making young people addicted to opium, like what happened in China before, that they don't raise voice against them. And this is outrageous what's happening.
Yeah, it is. It is a call for help. it's time the world stand up for them, to stand up for liberty. It's the time that freedom doesn't have to be paid with blood. We need to have people free all over. And I wish that your book will be a sensation all over the world. And
My book is one of the best international bestseller, you know, Price for Freedom. And the movie, actually, they start shooting the movie on January 3rd. And it's going to be in Hoboken Film Festival in May 29, 2015.
God willing. And sir, I'm looking forward to talk to you again about it when the film is happening. And I hope that you will give us the honor in Israel and come and visit Jerusalem, which we fight so hard to keep free from the pure of, you know, religious you know, fanatism that happens on the east side of the city. And I really, really bless you with a wonderful, wonderful journey of success and relieving, you know, the world from their fanatism. And maybe somebody will listen and start helping the real people of Iran that needs to be set free from this regime.
By the way, Doctor, I have been in Israel many, many times, and I was very close friend with Ariel Sharon, and that's why I named my son Ariel. And instead of Sharon, he said, make it Shalom. So he's Ariel Shalom Ben-Huri.
Oh, beautiful. And Ben-Hur, it means a man of freedom. Ben-Hurin, it's like in the Haggadah. You are a man of freedom. Baruch Hashem. Thank God for you. Mr. Ben-Huri, thank you so much for your time. I want to bless you with Happy Hanukkah. And I hope that the light of this year, menorah, will light your house with great, great joy and happiness. And I hope that it will bring a lot of joy all over the world. Thank you so much for your courage, for your excellent, excellent book and wonderful, wonderful journey ahead. God bless you, and thank you so much for coming.
I appreciate it. I wish you the same. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah to you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's go to a break. And this was Dr. Mark Ben-Huri, the one that was engineering the implants for dentists, met the Shah of Iran, become his dentist, and then he was in the middle of the crisis that took the 1970s from Enlightenment time in Iran to the dark time. Now, how many years we still have to have that darkness in the region? How many years we do have to keep on listening to them calling for destruction of the Israel and the rest of the Western world? How long the world is going to keep on silent, seeing that they are getting prosecuted one man every hour, and we are talking nonsense about, I don't remember what they're talking about anymore because everybody's confused. Nobody remember what's the side of the light and what the side of darkness. You can see the dark. You know, you need to light it up. Stop being hesitating. Stop being afraid that your courage is not enough. Our courage, the world's courage, can oversee that. We can make it. We can make the difference. It's not about, you know, going and destroying anybody. It's not about doing anything wrong, but it's just freeing those people from obscurity, those women that were marching in the street a few years back. I remember it was 2008. What was it? 2007, and the world was looking, oh my God, they're marching, the Iranians are revolting. Yeah, and who came to help them? I don't remember even one airplane dropping some rescue stuff for them. I don't remember anybody helping sending the troop. And they call us, and they help, and they told us they're coming back every 40 days to revolt. And they got killed, slaughtered in the street, and we did nothing. Iran is not the enemy of the world. The Iranian people, the Iranian regime is. We need to decide what world we want to live in. We want to decide what side of the game we are playing in. And if we want to leave this nature, this beautiful world that God gave us to the hands of those merciless, it's not about the life that, you know, we endanger. It's about the life that we give. Every time you hesitate, every time you think twice and give a chance for peace, give me a freaking break. It's about time. You all have to wake up. And I know it's morning in California. Good morning, California. I love you. And I know it's lunchtime in the East Coast. It has in Israel. There is a new election coming in. And what about light and darkness? Of course, people don't want to see the Jewish state. It is. And I'm connecting it to Iran because Iran is trying to destroy the Jewish state. Iran is sending all its goons through Hezbollah and through Syria and through Hamas and all those groups that coming like the mushroom up through the rain. They're all coming, and what they want to do to destroy this world, they worship the darkness. Now, something Dr. Mark said, he said that under the Shah, they destroyed so many mosques because it was the house of lie. It was the house of spies. It was, yes, you know what? Every time we protect those mosques that they becoming to be, holy sites, but they can kill everybody around it. That's not a holy site. Holy site doesn't make you kill anybody. The holy site doesn't make you holler to other people, go away, we'll destroy you. The people on holy sites are holy. And when you walk on holy sites, you can feel it. Holy is not something that is a word. It's something tangible, like the air you breathe. You can feel holiness as you walk into a synagogue, any other holy place where worshiping is for real. Where God is there, you can feel it. God is mighty, and it feels like it. It's not, you know, even cleanliness, even the care of the people. When you walk and you even, put, you know, ring a bell in the door of a wonderful Christian person, and he lets you in with all his arm open because you needed to use the phone, your car, or it was a rainy day. There are so many nice people that God is with them, and they become, you know, the rescue in the middle of the night to some people and bless their heart whole. The difference between light and darkness is very clear. There is nothing to wonder about. It's nothing to be questioned. If you see somebody you don't like, you know exactly why. And people don't try. Those enlightenment people that they have, and, you know, I love those enlightenment people because they think that they have the wisdom of the world with them when they factor out God, which is actually the ignorance of the thing, because you never factor out such a mighty force that created the universe and exists everywhere. And you know what? I don't need to prove God to you. God proves it every day. He proves it when the sun shines up and when the change of the day comes and night comes. That's God's creation. Nobody did it. When the trees are growing up for hundreds of years, that's God's creation. When the birds are flying and migrate from one place to another, it's God's creation. When salmon are digging out their food across, you know, against the tide, this is God's creation. I don't need to tell you that. You open your eyes and you can see the world. The world is very clear. And so people that want to destroy it. Now, we have so many people that decided, you know, they're sitting on the bend, you know, they are not going to care. And they're not going to care. But if you don't care, they're going to come to hunt. And there was a smart man that, you know, said that if you don't say something about other people, after one day they'll come for you too. So please don't feel that you're excluded from the world. Don't think that you can go into your mighty way and make yourself, you know, of responsibility. Teach your children responsibility when they wake up in the morning. Teach them responsibility to their other human being. Stop emphasizing things that are wrong. Money, you know, goes and comes, and some people are becoming rich one day, and then one day they're gone. That's the best thing that, you know, in life to know is the lottery. How many lottery men that, you know, won the lottery are broke? They're all broke. Why? Because it goes. It goes as it's come fast, it goes away. And it's not the essence of life. Life has a different rule in humanity. Life has the growth. You need to grow. We need to leap to the next level. We need to try to be better human beings than our ancestor being. They didn't have the tools. They didn't have the knowledge. Right now, nobody's ignorant anymore, and nobody's stupid. Everybody sees everything, and everybody can learn everything. You need to have a job. You can do your best, if not invent one, if not try and bless God and pray hard and work hard. Listen, we all in this, and this is the test of humanity. Everybody right now is running and looking for investors. Everybody is running and looking for a good job. Nobody has it easy. They stole it all, you know, all the mighty, beautiful people that, you know, we all like to worship so much. Oh, my God, they're so successful. They take all the money and they go. They take all the money, you know, all those groupies that we have around them that, you know, cater to them for free, for free. They're like enslaving themselves just because they're a mighty successful one. No, they need to pay for you. Don't do hard. Your hard work is worth it. You worth it. Don't give yourself for granted by anybody. Don't give it to, don't be free of, you know, of giving, you know, don't give your gift of life free. Just do, take what you deserve, but make your share, make your chance, you know, make your chance in life, and make a leap of faith, and trust that we can see it to the other side whole. We can see it united as a world decided to come together and become one. And we are not going to stand up and be silent anymore for the killing of humanity. The world creation, the children of the world are nobodies to take. Their life is sacred as everybody's life around the globe, and we need to protect them. We need to get rid of those goons everywhere. And I learned today they are rioting in Australia. In Australia, the one that, you know, that they didn't care, they didn't get involved in anything. And just recently, for some reason, I heard like there were something, you know, they were coming to term and helping. All of a sudden, I see the demonstration in the street. Now, what are you going to say? Because somebody made a video, they got offended. Do. You know, you got offended. I don't understand why people are their freedom. They can offend Jewish people. They can offend every other religion. But somebody who wrote to make a curtain. I don't know what they say. I respect everybody believes. I don't care for anybody talking about other religion badly. It's not good. Because if God created them, whatever they are, that's their faith, and that's God's decision. Who we are to even judge it. But to go around destroying, killing, oh God, I can't even start. Think we need a break. Let's go to a break, and then after that, I'll tell you about the new time, you know, the election in Israel. Maybe we're going to have them sooner than we believe. Let's put some music, Doug. And we are back on The Impossible Truth. This is Orly Benny Davis on BBS Radio. I think that we are learning today and each day that things are changing and changing fast. In Israel, they're going to have election soon if they decide to dissolve the government because they're still in session trying to debate on the last ruling before they release, this Knesset from existence. Which is good because I think that they didn't have actually a love affair between the coalition there, but it's not that confusing. Let's give you a basic. There was also a movement of freedom here for the workers, and they wanted a new leadership to help the people. The only problem is that they chose a leader that it doesn't actually come from the working people. He's elitist. And what happened is he ran the Treasury Department and didn't raise taxes on the rich, and they were a lot of problems. But it was he's a nice man. He's Lapid. He's very, very young. Not actually very savvy in politics, but he's an honest-to-God man. He's the son of a child, a Holocaust survivor, which was a minister also in the government, Mr. Lapid. He was anti-religious. I love those anti-religious people that come. And I remember meeting him in Washington, D.C., telling the story about these Holocaust survivors when he was running away from those regime of the dark age of the Second World War, which I don't want even to mention because they don't worth the word that to name them even. And he was standing in the square, running, freezing cold, and he was saying, there must be a place where a Jew can be free. And then he come to Israel and become anti-religious, which is, I don't know, it's a controversial. So I remember I was telling him, hey, you said that. So I think he had a change of heart before he died. But his son is a very God-worthy person. I believe the American Jewry believe in him, and they will try to bring him to leadership, but he's not ready yet. He doesn't have his coalition going well, so I don't think he has a chance to do it. And all those, behind the scenes scheme that, let's build a different coalition with Benjamin Netanyahu is in power. It's really not worthy of mentioning, but it's really cunning and condescending to think that, people from the around, the jury and jury decide to take on that decision to change the government in Israel without even knowing what's going on in Israel. They know from what they say, they know what they understand. And, we have to make it really clear to the world and to the American especially. World Jewry is a different thing. It is a different entity than the Israelis. Israelis are built, they're different minority too, but they are different because they have to face those goons every day. And when you fight in the middle of the jungle, You know, your Tea Party, not to mention the GOP Tea Party, God forbid, you know, I love them. But your cocktail, you know, parties really don't emphasize what the Israeli goes through. So this conference of Saban that just finished, thank God, this weekend, was really condescending to some of the leadership in Israel. And we had an ambassador eating, stating, you know, to Mr. Bennett, one that grew up fighting for Israel. Then he served the country, was advisor. Then he become a leader of his own party. He succeeded to become one of the largest parties in the government of Israel. And Mr. Martin Indyk said to him, "Oh, your reality is not, your perspective is wrong," insulting him in front of all the other people. Now, what do you expect, Ambassador Indyk, that he would kiss you and, you know, say, "Oh, you know, give you the other cheek"? He's not. He's a fighter. He's not. And Mr. Indyk had to suffer through, punching, let's say, words, to say it easy. He had to get insulted back because that's what he created, a controversial that puts Bennett in a bad position. And Bennett is not extreme. Bennett is not a guy that you can push around. He's a smart guy. He's a good friend of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And they know each other very well to know that, you know, Bennett is not seeking to be the prime minister, but it's not going to overcome anybody who's push him around. So watch out, you guys, when you touch tigers, you know, on this course, just remember, you might get beat off. So watch out, everybody, when you see somebody is in danger, don't think that it will look, you know, at your eyes twice to kiss you, to say I love you when you're trying to insult and saying, "Oh, he really detached from reality." Oh, yeah? Well, Mr. Indyk, so sorry, but your time was up. And our time is up. And if they decide to dissolve the government, I don't know how it's going to happen. Now, I was running in the last Knesset because the Jewish state is a worthy race to run for. But who knows? One day we'll have some chances to work something out. I love you all. I think it was incredible to talk to Dr. Mark Nouri by the book, The Price of Freedom. And I can't wait to see the movie. I hope that you had a wonderful show. I hope to hear from you sometimes on BBS Radio, Orly Benny Davis, The Impossible Truth. And I say goodbye. Salute you for a wonderful week, a wonderful beginning, and a great start. And we have Hanukkah next week, so may the light will start shining all over for everybody, all over the world. I love you all. I love you, America. I love Israel. And I love you, God. Thank God for all you all. All the best, guys. See you next week. Talk to you next week. God bless.